Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here at PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Sunday evening for August 7th, 2022. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, and we are here to talk about the big shows in pro wrestling. And we've got some things to talk about this week. And to help me do that and break down everything we saw in this week of pro wrestling is PWTorch.com contributor Tony D'Onofrio, a longtime PWTorch.com contributor. Glad to have you on the show this week, Tony.
Happy to be back, as always. Love joining you, and let's get into it.
Yeah, absolutely. And first of all, if you missed last week's show, if you were looking for us on Sunday, well, you probably missed us because we were on the air Saturday night after SummerSlam, so it's not too late to catch our post-SummerSlam Wrestling Night in America show. You can go to wherever you get your Wrestling Night in America podcast, your PW Torch podcast, and you can find it in the queue right there. A lot of fun talking about a very eventful SummerSlam event, PLE, if you will, last weekend. So enjoyed that, and I'm sure we'll enjoy the conversation, Tony. I know that SummerSlam is still on the hearts and minds of a lot of fans. We saw, you know, we'll get to what we saw this week in WWE TV in a moment, but I'm just curious about your thoughts about SummerSlam and whether you were as positive coming out of the show as a lot of people were based on the booking decisions made by the new creative, based on the results, based on the in-ring work, et cetera, et cetera.
You know, it's what I felt like I was in the minority. I know I saw a lot of, you know, wrestling Twitter seemed to be very bullish about it, and maybe it was because I had a real long weekend last weekend, and I know I got home, I put the show on just in time, and I got through it, and I thought I was one of those ones where I thought the show was okay. Obviously, the end was very creative with the bulldozer finish, and if that's what you want to call it, the tractor finish, and all of that sort. But at the same time, like I said, I thought it was okay. I thought a lot of people really overestimated how great the show really was. I wasn't down on the show, but I definitely didn't think it was as good as a lot of people thought. But at the same time, I also wasn't disappointed when I'm looking down the road and at the big picture, because to me, even though Vince McMahon has been gone for, what, I guess 2 weeks now, or maybe it would have been 2 weeks on last Sunday or last Saturday, whenever that show went off the air, to me, that was the last true Vince McMahon show, because I'm sure they saw out some of the rest of those storylines, and they just kind of capped things off with what Vince had the vision for. So, you know, even though I was not blown away by SummerSlam and I was not nearly as impressed as others, for me, that was the end of the Vince era at SummerSlam. And I feel like, you know, some of the stuff that's happened this week is a little bit more indicative of what's to come rather than what we saw at SummerSlam, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it too, is, you know, Vince McMahon stepped down from creative officially and stepped down from WWE officially on that Friday just over a week before SummerSlam. And, you know, by that point, everything had kind of been laid out for SummerSlam. You could have come in if you were Triple H and been a bull in a china shop and just completely revamped everything with 1 week to go, but probably not the smart way to do things. You know, get those last couple weeks of SmackDown, get that last Raw in the can where you're building up, doing the final build for those matches that have already been announced, and then go forward with SummerSlam, and then Monday on Raw is where you can kind of officially put your stamp on things going forward, because a lot of stories came to a close at SummerSlam, or you had an opportunity close at least the chapter or the book on some of those feuds at SummerSlam and start anew the next night. So I think that's a pretty smart way to look at it. Now, looking back on this past week of TV, I think this dovetails nicely into what I wanted to talk about next, which is what we saw on Raw and SmackDown this week. Seems to be a bit of a mixed bag in terms of reaction. A lot of people really enjoyed what they saw on Raw. SmackDown, I think people enjoyed what they saw on SmackDown as well. Karrion Kross coming back. That's a decision that not a lot of people have been on board for. So that's kind of a mark in the minus box for Triple H through his first week of creative. And, you know, I will say I put this out on Twitter at Greg M. Parks right after Raw went off the air Monday. And I just asked, like, if you were not a usual viewer of Raw, but tuned in to see, you know, either you heard the buzz about SummerSlam and you wanted to tune in to see what happened next, or you heard about Triple H taking over creative and you wanted to see what that looked like in earnest starting Monday on Raw. Did you see enough on that episode to keep you tuning in moving forward at least another week? And I got some great replies, and actually my Torch newsletter column, my full page column that I have in every Torch newsletter, pwtorch.com/govip to sign up, this week is going to be on that question and the reaction I got from Twitter about that question. So something to look forward to there. But, you know, it seems to be at least mixed reviews. We did see some pretty stark differences. You know, we had a lot more, I think it was a couple of weeks ago that someone had tallied up the ring time for SmackDown versus Rampage, and SmackDown actually had less wrestling in a two-hour show, bell to bell, than Rampage did in 1 hour of TV. Obviously, that was not the case this week. We saw that wrestling took center stage, the bell to bell wrestling, more so than it had on TV in some time. So, Tony, what was your thoughts on WWE's presentation of main roster television, Raw and SmackDown this week? And I guess I'll, you know, if you're, I don't know what your usual viewing habits are, but, you know, if you can, if you're a person who doesn't watch Raw and SmackDown every week, but you watched this week, did it keep you tuning in? Or maybe if you do watch Raw and SmackDown every week, put yourself in the shoes of someone who may not be that type of viewer who is tuning in this week. Just what did you see from Triple H's creative this week?
So my schedule's all over the place, so I usually watch it on DVR after the fact. And it was funny, I actually had this, I feel like everyone that's a fan of pro wrestling probably had the conversation with either someone on Twitter or someone they work with. And I had a similar, you know, conversation with someone at work, and we both agreed that, you know, we watch the show kind of on DVR also because our schedules are similar in that they're all over the place. Especially with Monday's Raw, I would say there was a lot less fast-forwarding through things that you would normally fast-forward through. Definitely, the match qualities and the quality of the matches was much better. There was a lot more wrestling on the show, which I think is a good thing. And there was, if I recall correctly, I think on Monday there was two quote-unquote finishes that are not, you know, straight down the line like you're going to see on Dynamite or Rampage, meaning, you know, DQ-type finishes, countouts, et cetera, things of that sort. But I think one actually led to a second match on Raw, so that one I wasn't so, you know, down on. But there was a lot less, a lot more concise booking within that manner, that you were getting longer matches that made sense. And, you know, that carried some into SmackDown as well, where, you know, you're not getting the typical 15-minute match that ends in a DQ or a count out or something like that. I mean, there was still a little bit of that this week, but you could see they kind of phased that out. So in terms of the booking, I feel it's going to be baby steps. I think your regular WWE fans, they're not going to go anywhere. They've seen so many changes over the last 25 years from the beginning of the Attitude Era through Ruthless Aggression, the PG Era, and all of that sort. I don't think they're going anywhere. But I think if you were a casual fan coming out of Raw on Monday, I think there was enough there to say, yeah, I got to give this another look, just because, you know, the quality of the matches was definitely there. It was something, you know, something different. The idea, at least in the short term, that Ciampa's getting a little bit of a better look than he would have ever gotten under Vince McMahon. And then even looking at SmackDown, I didn't think the match quality itself for the women's gauntlet was great, but I at least like the direction they're going. And I'm hoping that this is maybe a revival for Shayna Baszler. You know, when she was brought up from NXT, that first match that she was brought up for was, I believe, in Elimination Chamber a couple years ago. And she went through that, and she came out of NXT as a monster. And then within a couple months, Vince McMahon got tired of her, and she just turned into any other female on that roster. So I think there's enough this week that you can point to and say, yeah, there's some changes in the air. And to your point earlier, you know, Triple H, he's not going to get too bullish. You know, you can't completely flip the script overnight, but I like some of the directions that were taken this week. And I think if you're a casual fan that maybe slipped away from WWE for a few years now, if you're coming back on Monday or, you know, especially on Monday, more so Monday than Friday, I think you're going to look at that and go, yeah, it's worth another week. And then, you know, hopefully the progress continues. And one thing's for certain, it's a 3-hour show is too long. It just is, but we've said that for 10 years now. But if anything, at least Monday, it felt like everything meant something. And there wasn't a lot of that fluff or filler that you're used to getting. So overall, I'd say it was probably like a B+, but that's a big step up from most Raws, where I would say most Raws the last 6 to 12 months are C-minus type shows. So I think there's some things to look forward to that are encouraging.
And you mentioned Shayna Baszler getting the win on SmackDown in that gauntlet match. Also Ricochet, worth pointing out, getting the win over Baron Corbin. And, you know, despite Ricochet being a recent United States champion, I think Corbin was definitely the more visible wrestler, the more pushed wrestler coming into that. So that could be a changing of the guard as well. You know, there were thoughts that coming into this, coming into Triple H taking over, that any changes he was going to make were going to be slow. Were, you know, maybe not noticeable within the first couple of weeks. Maybe, you know, 3 months in, you'll notice changes and things like that. But we've seen, you know, some booking decisions with Baszler and Ricochet going over, Ciampa, as you mentioned on Raw, getting a little more attention, decisions that we don't think Vince McMahon would have made. We've seen the additions of Bayley being put with Io Sky now, Io Shirai in NXT, Io Sky, as well as Dakota Kai being brought back. We've seen Karrion Kross being brought back. I mean, these are all Triple H moves for sure. Are you surprised at how early Triple H is kind of putting his fingerprint on creative with some of these big moves and bring some released wrestlers back?
Not so much. And I think you made a good point earlier, is that he's picking his spots. He's sprinkling some stuff in. I mean, he hasn't messed too much with the bloodline, obviously the Karrion Kross thing, which I'll circle back to, the Bayley, Io Sky and Dakota Kai faction, I think is, you know, that was his first big move. Obviously, that happened at the beginning of SummerSlam after the first match. I thought that, you know, that was his first big move. And then to your point, you know, the Ricochet push, we'll see if it lasts. But if it's done right, you know, you mentioned the push Ricochet got earlier this spring, and it wasn't much of a push. It was kind of a, we'll give this guy a title and see what happens. But it really wasn't a push. The Karrion Kross one really is the polarizing one. And you mentioned it before, it seemed like it was mostly negative online. And I know even Sean Radican, I saw his tweet and I couldn't help but laugh, because he's right that, you know, since those two were released, whatever, was it last year? I feel like since COVID, everything, all time is just, I've lost all sense of time of when these guys, it was last year, I believe, late last year, when they got released, that, boy, they really didn't get much buzz on, even on the indies, as much as you thought they were going to. And everyone thought, boy, as soon as their time up, their 90 days is up, they're definitely going to jump to AEW, or maybe they'll end up back at Impact. And that, you know, that those 90 days came and went, that didn't happen. And they weren't getting the type of buzz on the indies that, you know, some of the other, you know, released wrestlers that WWE got rid of, you know, that we seemed like, you really seemed like, man, someone's going to scoop them up and make them into big stars. It just didn't happen. And I'm not to say they just went radio silent, but, you know, so I tend to agree with Sean that Karrion and Scarlett, they didn't get a lot of buzz while they're gone. But having said that, you know, with if the machine in WWE, now being Triple H, behind those two, I think they can make a huge impact. And Obviously, Triple H was real high on the guy before he lost control of NXT. So, like I said, to me, there are some things that he did this past week that are obvious moves for Triple H, that, you know, Paul Levesque, that I think were very noticeable. But again, I think he picked his spots and before he really, you know, turns the screws, and maybe in a few months things could be unrecognizable. But to me, I think he's just picking his spots at this point. And so far, I can't say there's anything to really be upset about, despite the fact that the Karrion Kross thing is a bit polarizing.
515-605-9345 is the number to call if you would like to chat with us about any of these topics. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, joined by PWTorch.com contributor Tony D'Onofrio as we talk about the big shows in pro wrestling here on Wrestling Night in America, as we do each and every Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, on PWTorchDailyCast.com. You can also send an email if you're a little shy or don't have time to hang on for the entirety of the show, WNIALivecast@gmail.com. I've got those emails open as we do the show. So we've got at least one email we'll get to, maybe more, depending on if anyone else sends anything else in. So the Kross thing is really, I have a lot of thoughts about that, I think. And to me, that's probably the most interesting move that he's made in the last week. And by he, I mean Triple H. Kross is a guy who objectively didn't work as champion in NXT. And it may have been a square peg in a round hole situation where the lineage of the NXT title was one of indie darlings who could put on four star matches at the blink of an eye. Kross was not that. And so, you know, when you put him in that role and fans have come to expect a certain in-ring quality from someone in that spot, there's naturally going to be a lot of disappointed people. And I think that's kind of what happened with Kross. That's not to say he doesn't have a role. And you could even make the argument that he's better suited for the main roster than he is on NXT, because NXT put more of a premium on in-ring work. You know, WWE's in-ring work, probably some of the highest it's ever been in the time that I've been watching WWE. So, you know, it's not to say that the Raw and SmackDown featured bad wrestling every week, but, you know, NXT at the time that Kross was there was known for the high level of wrestling. So then you look at his main roster run and how just completely blown that was. And some people will say it wasn't blown. Some people will say he was just exposed for what he really is. And I guess I'm somewhere in the middle there. What's interesting to me is this isn't Triple H calling up Io Sky, who never got a chance on the main roster. It's not re-signing Dakota Kai, who was released before she got a chance on the main roster. It's bringing in Karrion Kross, who was buried during a very short main roster run, and now putting him in a position of prominence. I mean, he closed out the last segment of SmackDown, attacking Drew McIntyre, who is challenging for the undisputed WWE yada, yada, yada title at Castle in September, and seemed to be making eyes at Roman Reigns. So this wasn't, we're just going to bring him back and ease him in. This is, we're going to bring him back, and we're going to push him into a prominent position. This felt like Triple H putting his foot down and saying, Vince got this wrong. And so that, I think that to me, that's why it's the most interesting to me, whether, you know, his opinion is Vince didn't package him properly. You know, we saw Kross come back with a little bit of a different look. He got the hair. He's got the leather jacket. May have been an improvement on the look that he last had on the main roster. So it's just, you know, this is a situation where it seems like Triple H is pointing the finger a little bit at Vince McMahon and saying, I'm going to take this guy who you flopped on the main roster, and I'm going to make him into something that you couldn't. And I'm probably reading a little more into that than I should, but that's kind of my takeaway. And you know, it's probably something as simple as Triple H sees something in this guy. He was obviously a backer of him in NXT and just brought him in and put him in a prominent position because SmackDown needs fresh faces. But yeah, I thought that was interesting for those reasons.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when you think about Cross's first run, whatever it was last year, you know, main roster WWE is very much a lot of sizzle with maybe not so much steak. And one of the best parts about Karrion Kross in NXT, as you mentioned before, it wasn't his matches. It was the presentation. And Vince dropped the presentation and put his own, you know, from the entrance, the lack of Scarlett, the entrance, the lack of Scarlett, putting him in that ridiculous-looking helmet. And now, you know, Triple H brings him back, and he's kind of a hybrid, like you said, hybrid presentation of what he had in NXT. He's got the entrance. It seems like he's going to get his entrance back. Obviously, he brought his wife, Scarlett, back with him. And a kind of a mix with the leather jacket and the visual presentation of Cross himself. But I think you're right. I think this is the one where, you know, you look at some of the things that Triple H is doing, and if you're to believe what you see online, which obviously you got to be careful of that, between the Cross debut, or should I say re-debut, and the arrival of Bayley with Io Shirai and Io Sky and Dakota Kai, those seem to be the two things that Triple H is going to go. It seems like, to your point, where he's going to say, you know what, Vince, you screwed up Cross. I had presentation for him. And then if you're to believe what is online, that this faction of Bayley, Sky, and Kai was supposed to be something that was presented to Vince McMahon months ago and he vetoed. You know, there are a couple things that it seems to be, you know, Triple H is pointing at Vince going, all right, you know, I respect you, but you dropped the ball on a couple things. And it seems like these are the two that he's looking to really push and show Vince, you know, I respect what you've done, but you're not always right. And I'm going to show you how to do this here.
Yeah. The other interesting thing about that report that the Bayley faction had been pitched to Vince and he turned it down is, you know, was that something, would Triple H have even known about that pitch? Because he wouldn't have been around, certainly not around creative at that time. So was this just kind of like the writers pitching stuff that they'd pitched to Vince and trying to get it back in to Triple H? Or was it, you know, I wonder how that worked. Certainly Triple H more amenable to that, and maybe that's what we'll see going forward, where he's more accepting of ideas that isn't filtered through his lens. I think that's the hope. And even if it is, I think his lens of professional wrestling lines up more with mine and with a lot of other people's who read the Torch and who are subscribers than it does with Vince McMahon's. So interesting to see how that goes. Before we get off the topic, and again, we've got no calls, so we're only going to go as long as we have things to talk about or calls and emails. So if you want to get in line, I mean, the phone lines are open, 515-605-9345. Don't forget to press 1 to chat, or again, you can email us, wnialivecast@gmail.com. Got an email from Brian. He says, after watching Raw, it appears that the SmackDown Women's Division needs an influx of talent. What are WWE's options for accomplishing this, draft, trade, call-ups, etc.? Who would you reassign to SmackDown and why? So this is an interesting sort of experiment here. Obviously, Raw getting Bayley, getting Io Sky, and getting Dakota Kai is kind of a 3-for-1 deal for them. Certainly, Charlotte Flair expected to return to SmackDown at some point soon, which should beef up the SmackDown depth chart. You've got rumors swirling that Sasha Banks and Naomi are returning. So if that ends up coming true, that's three women right there all on SmackDown who would more than make up for Raw getting Bayley, Dakota Kai, and Io Sky. But let's say Banks and Naomi don't return. Anyone, Tony, from – let's start with call-ups. Anyone from NXT that you would bring up to SmackDown to help that out. And we saw the Gauntlet this week. They have women, you know, Raquel Rodriguez getting a big push in there, sort of continuing the big push she got under Vince McMahon. Xia Li is there, who I think has been underutilized since she's been up on the main roster. Shotzi is someone that they could use if they got behind her. Aaliyah, sort of an undercard, I guess. So we saw the SmackDown women's division and sort of the depth or lack thereof there during that Gauntlet match. But anyone in NXT, Tony, that you would earmark for a main roster push if you had to call someone up in the next few weeks?
So it seems to me that, especially I think NXT has that, well, in about a month's time, they got the show going up against All Out. I can't remember what it's called off the top of my head, but I know it's also a premium live event for NXT. It seems to me, I have a feeling that Mandy Rose is going to be dropping that NXT title. And I mean, it always felt like from the start that they were grooming the trio, the Toxic Attraction trio, for the main roster. And Mandy Rose has already been on the main roster. She's already been in an interview recently where she stated that she's ready to go back to the main roster. Probably not what she should be saying right now as NXT Women's Champion, but hey, she already said it, so I'm going to repeat it. To me, that was always the act that it seemed earmarked for the main roster, because it just felt like a main roster act. You had a former main roster talent in Mandy Rose that went down there. I think, that act, whether you love it or hate it, plus with the rumblings that WWE is looking to go back to a TV-14 presentation, which, sidebar on that, TV ratings, a rating for television is not done as the same as a movie, where WWE can push the envelope as much as they like under that TV PG, and TV-14 doesn't mean anything because it's not regulated like a rated R or a rated PG-13
right.
in a movie. So, I mean, they can kind of do what they want, whether it's – so I could see Toxic Attraction going. I really like Zoe Stark. I think she would be a good fit, but I think she's actually going to end up taking the title from Mandy later this month or early next month, whenever that show actually goes off. And the one that I think she's beyond her years would be Roxanne Perez, but I just get the feeling they're going to keep her down in NXT to the old earn, pay your dues type thing. But she's light years beyond her actual age in terms of in-ring ability and talent. But I don't think she'll be the one. For me, it's Toxic Attraction. And I think, I wouldn't be surprised if right after that show, the Labor Day weekend, probably after the Castle show as well, maybe they use that as like a post-WrestleMania type thing to bring up some talents. Not only the women, I could see a couple of the guys from NXT being brought up as well, but we'll stick with the women for now. I think Toxic Attraction is probably the next one to come up as a group, because then you're also getting three.
Yeah, Mandy Rose is the one that stood out to me from NXT. I'm torn on whether or not they call Toxic Attraction up as a group. I think that would make sense, but I'm not. We've seen that before, where WWE has only taken parts of a group from NXT and put them on the main roster. Remains to be seen what Triple H's philosophy is going to be, if he wants to play it more so that you keep the character and everything that they developed in NXT intact, or if they just kind of do their own thing. So Mandy, certainly Cora Jade and Roxanne Perez are two of the other standouts in NXT. Roxanne worries me a little bit for such an early call-up, because I think her character is very close to Liv Morgan. And we saw already some backlash to Liv Morgan on SmackDown this past week in terms of the crowd reaction. So if you want to continue to portray Morgan as a top-level player in the women's division, I don't think you want to call up another wide-eyed young babyface in Roxanne Perez, because you could even argue that she does the act better than Liv Morgan. So I think that would be troublesome for Morgan's future. Cora Jade, I was not really on board with the heel turn that she did. I would prefer to see her as a babyface. I think she could be a strong main roster babyface. But there
also the Cora Jade thing was, sorry to interrupt, the Cora Jade turn way too soon. They didn't build that up at all.
Sure.
But yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I that's a good point. But yeah, Mandy Rose is sort of like number one, and then sort of another level down in terms of who I think should be called up or would be called up in this situation would be Roxanne Perez and Cora Jade, Mandy Rose slash JC Jayne and Gigi Dolan, I guess, if you want to put them all together. So that's kind of, you know, there's not really a lot of women who stand out. I think there's some who have potential that could eventually be called up from NXT. You look at someone like, you know, like you said, Zoe Stark, I think, is someone who could be a maybe not so much in Vince McMahon's WWE, but now that Triple H is running things, I think she has a better chance of having a better future on the main roster. I think, you know, just looking through the roster here, Electra Lopez still needs more time, but I think she's someone who could – Indy Hartwell, you know, I think Triple H was – a big proponent of Indy and Johnny Gargano and Candice LeRae. Obviously, Theory was part of that group, and he's having success on the main roster. So does Indy Hartwell get called up? She's someone who you could see in that role. You know, those are the ones that Nikita Lyons, I think, you know, further down the line, she's got somewhat of a cult following. I think she's someone who could be upon at some point. Back to Brian's email here. So that was the call-ups part. He also asked about draft or trade, and, you know, a draft maybe this fall. I think that's when they, September-ish is when they had it last year, so maybe after Clash at the Castle, but really they're not, they hadn't been adhering to the draft as closely as they had been in the past. You know, we've had guys in recent weeks and women jumping to and from without much of an explanation. So realistically, SmackDown could take anyone from Raw and use them on SmackDown. But in terms of the draft, is there anyone that you see on Raw who maybe with a thinner depth chart on SmackDown could be utilized better there in terms of the women's division?
I would say criminally underused, you know, in the last so many months would be Alexa Bliss. I mean, she was always a big-time player.
They don't really seem to know what to do with her.
Yeah, that's just insane. And so maybe a fresh look for her on SmackDown is the way to go, because it's they bring her back, and then she floats around, and then they seem to take her off TV and rinse repeat since late last year. And to me, that's the one big name that I can't believe she's not doing something more on Raw than. So for me, that would be the one I think I'd get over to SmackDown immediately.
That's a good call, and it's kind of weird because they had kept her off TV. They did the vignettes where she was ditching the, you know, second-in-command behind Bray Wyatt character and bringing her back more as her original main roster character, and then it didn't seem like they really knew what to do with her. So that's been kind of strange. I think Rhea Ripley, I'm not – I go back and forth with her in the Judgment Day. I think sometimes that it's good that she's in that role and sometimes not so good. My fear of moving her to SmackDown is you've got Raquel Rodriguez there. And so I'm not sure if that's very similar to what Rhea Ripley is doing. Doudrop, maybe, if you want to kind of repackage her into something that is more meaningful. You know, those are the two that really stand out to me in terms of folks who could make more of a splash on the SmackDown brand.
I'd also like to think, because Triple H seems to take a more reality-based approach than Vince would. Another one that maybe a sleeper would be Nikki Cross, not Nikki A.S.H., but Nikki Cross.
Yeah.
Because, you know, down when Nikki was in NXT, Triple H was booked her very strongly as well. You know, I mean, he didn't book her like he did some of the really, you know, strong ones that he had when he had Bayley and, you know, Becky and Charlotte at their peak down there. But he treated Nikki with respect, and I know he booked her a lot better than Vince has ever had on the main roster, too. So that could be a sleeper one where she gets repackaged and sent back to SmackDown, and we could forget the almost a superhero thing ever happened. It's been an odd 12 months for her. It seemed like she got some steam going into SummerSlam last year, and then they took a gem of a, you know, like a nugget of an idea and they turned it into something really hokey. But she's a really talented wrestler, and for her to maybe get, I hate to say repackaged, but almost put her back in the, into the old role of just Nikki Cross and just let her be herself. And sometimes that's what works best. I mean, it worked for Becky Lynch years ago. And, you know, when they kept fighting with the crowds were what, you know, the crowd wanted to just accept Becky for who she was. And I mean, you could even say that the past year they've been doing it as well. So
yeah.
There's no reason to believe that, you know, Nikki Cross just being Nikki Cross couldn't get over if she's basically reintroduced as herself on SmackDown after a draft.
And that's another interesting thing worth watching. You know, we've seen Triple H bring in some folks who he booked well in NXT, bringing them to the main roster. We've seen some turns that he's made, Becky Lynch being at the very top of the list, turning babyface there, to sort of, again, put his stamp on things. And the next thing you have to look at is repackages. You know, does Doudrop get repackaged? Does Nikki A.S.H. get repackaged? Some of these groan-inducing Vince McMahon gimmicks that he's come up with over the last few years, do some of those get readjusted to give those wrestlers a little bit more of a chance to make some kind of impact? Because I think, you know, with Doudrop and with Nikki A.S.H., the level of impact they can make on the main roster is limited with those characters. So we'll see if that's a priority. Maybe not in week two or week three, but, you know, month one, month two, once he gets a handle on the direction that he wants to go with a lot of the main stuff, it could eventually trickle down to some of the lower card wrestlers. The last thing I want to go to before we go to our first phone call is NXT. We talked a little bit about that, who might get called up to help stabilize the SmackDown Women's roster. But what are your expectations for NXT now? Because this whole redesign of NXT was largely a Vince McMahon, Kevin Dunn joint. It was their idea to remake what NXT was. Triple H had a very different vision for NXT, and that didn't change really until his hand was forced. Do you see him changing NXT more back to what it was under his watch, or do you think he kind of goes with the flow for what NXT is now, at least for a little while?
I think eventually it's going to be like a hybrid. I don't think we're ever going to get the black and gold brand back, as I butcher that. The black and gold brand back. That's a lot of alliteration.
It's tough to say.
Vince would have loved that. Yeah, well, Vince McMahon would have loved that. So it would have been good. But I don't think we're getting that back. But I also think the 2.0 thing, I think Vince, the one thing Vince had right is NXT in its truest form was supposed to be a developmental territory. And I think it needs to stay that. It is important for your young developing wrestlers to be able to kind of hone that craft. Maybe it, like, and they're not going to call it this, but like an NXT 1.5 where, you know, I can't see them holding to the Vince edict where we're not going to hire indie wrestlers anymore. But at the same time, you got to pick and you got to be a little more choosy. You can't just basically create a super indie and call it NXT anymore. It's got to be guys, you know, that fit a vision for a main roster, you bring them in to develop, while also keeping that NIL program going as well, because they're, you know, they seem to be committed to that. There's a lot of college athletes that seem to be committed to WWE's version of it too. If you look, you know, they have a strong crop of that. And if you're to believe the reports from the tryouts a few weeks ago with some of these college athletes that don't have any sort of background in amateur or in wrestling or, you know, things of that sort, I heard it was a disaster. I read that it was a disaster. So I could see it being something along the lines of where you're looking to develop guys like they have a Braun Breaker where, you know, very limited experience, but you know he's a good athlete. But at the same time, keeping your eye on the ball with the indies and places like MLW and, you know, other indies of that sort that, you know, aren't quite as big, and bringing in guys that, you know, this guy can develop into something. And there's got to be a nice sweet spot or middle ground, you think, between the black and gold and 2.0 that I think needs to be achieved so that you can bring talent in and develop them. And some of them will be further along than others when you bring them in. But I think that's what they need to try to achieve, or at least that's what I would be going for.
All right, let's go to the phones. DJ from Miami is up. DJ, welcome to the show. What's on your mind tonight?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Where
to start. You guys want to start on EAW or WWE?
Let's start with WWE since that's what we've been talking about.
Okay. Okay, here we go. Now that Cross is back, I feel like going into this, I don't know what Triple H is thinking, but Braun Breaker is like, you know, a caged dog getting ready to get out. I feel like if they're going to bring these bigger guys coming in, if Braun Breaker comes in, at the end of the day, these guys, Cody's going to be shadowed if going out of, you know, like maybe Royal Rumble or, you know, or WrestleMania, because all these new guys and bigger guys are coming in now, Cross and maybe Holy Breaker and, you know, maybe they'll do something with Gunther now and all these guys. So what do you guys see at the end of the day with Cody and all these guys that now that Triple H is here and, you know, maybe this is the bigger era again? I don't know. What do you guys think at the end of the day because they brought back Cross?
Well, the WWE roster, if the first week under Triple H, you know, officially, I guess, is any indication, the WWE roster could look very different, Tony. Royal Rumble time-ish, when Cody Rhodes, probably the earliest he could return from his torn pec. So it's really hard to say. I will say, though, no matter what the roster looks like, I don't think Cody is in danger of getting lost in the shuffle. I think that Cody has a tremendous amount of respect for Triple H. In fact, he's said so publicly numerous times. I think Triple H probably, you know, Triple H loved Dusty Rhodes. Cody, the son of Dusty Rhodes. Dusty had a very prominent position in NXT for a long time. So I don't think – is there a concern, Tony, do you think? I personally don't think so, of Cody coming back and where he might fit in January. With the caveat, of course, as I said, that the roster might look quite a bit different, but that could also be to benefit Cody Rhodes, because it may give him a lot of new talent to work with.
Yeah, I don't see it being a big problem. I kind of mentioned it before. You could tell that Triple H is definitely putting his, you know, his fingerprints on certain things, and he's being selective. But it doesn't seem like he's messed with some of the big acts, because some of the, you know, you don't change what's working. The bloodline is working. Drew McIntyre is over as hell. It's working. The only thing I would do is get rid of the sword, but that's another conversation for another time. Cody, before he left, you know, he was one of the most over guys in the company. To think that, you know, Triple H is going to come in and, you know, knock him back down to mid-card level, I don't see it happening. You know, if there's one thing that Triple H has shown anytime he's had control of something is if something is over, he'll push it. I mean, he did it in NXT with guys that didn't work on the main roster, whether it's the Adam Rose types or different things like that, because it worked in NXT, and he went with it. And Cody Rhodes is not like – I'm not comparing Cody Rhodes to Adam Rose or anything like that, but just to say, like, if it works and it's over, I see Triple H running with it. And then, DJ, you made the point that, you know, what do you do with someone like a Braun Breaker that's, you know, kind of chomping at the bit? For me – you know, Braun Breaker is I think he has a very bright future, but because of the fact that he's worked in NXT and he hasn't got to work with a lot of guys, at least consistently, where he's gotten the reps that he's needed, because he only debuted, what, maybe a little over a year ago? And you figure they do weekly television. They have not been touring until I think recently they may have been doing the Florida loop again. He only has, I'd be willing to bet he only has somewhere around 30 to 35 matches under his belt. He needs to get a lot of reps in with guys that really know how to work. And I think that's where Triple H taking this whole system over, granted, it may be a while before he starts putting his fingerprints on NXT again, because he has bigger fish to fry at this point. But Braun Breaker needs to work with some guys, and he needs to get out on the road and work these. They should bring him up to the main roster and let him just work the house shows. Because him being on the road, working these matches, I think it would do a big, you know, it would give Braun Breaker like a big, it would help with the learning curve is what I'm looking for on that. And I think, like I said, I think he has a bright future, but I think he needs to get out on the road and just work matches with live crowds and like I said, because as good as he is, and don't get me wrong, I think he's a phenom for the limited amount of matches that he's worked, but he needs to get out there and work matches in front of crowds and see how to work, you know, how to work in front of those crowds and not just in that TV studio, basically, that they're running out of in Orlando. But I hope that answers your question in terms of what you were looking for there.
Tony, yeah, I'm only asking this question half seriously. So respond however you like, but would there be any residual, not necessarily anger, but jealousy or pettiness on the part of Triple H in booking Cody Rhodes, knowing that Cody was an EVP for AEW, the company that basically embarrassed Triple H and caused him to lose his spot in NXT and caused his baby to be completely reformatted? Is there any way that Triple H has such an ego that he would take that out on Cody in booking?
I guess only if he wants to be like his father-in-law. That's the only way I can take that. Because, I mean, it's basically that's what his father-in-law did to Dusty, and you know, that's just the petty stuff that Vince would do. And I would like to hope that Triple H is not, you know, a chip off the father-in-law block, but I would hope not. But, you know, nothing would surprise me, but I would really hope not.
Yeah, it would certainly be a detriment to WWE. DJ, let's go back to you. Second question for you.
I don't know. I just had this crazy feeling they're going to try to shadow him because he's not a bigger guy, and they are bringing a bigger guy. I don't know. I just had this weird feeling with Triple H and him, you know, with the beef. So I don't know. We'll see, I guess, in January. My next thing is Triple H said he wants to get away from entertainment and go back to wrestling. So if that's true, is he going to bring more belts in? Is he going to bring more belts out? Is he going to bring more fashions in? Is he going to bring more fashions out? Are they going to bring more tag team champions in? Or bring more tag team champions out? Are they going to push the middleweight belt now? Where do you guys think at the end of the day, and let's say 6 to 8 months from now, do you think that they're going to do, you know, wrestling more, or do you think that it's still going to be more of an entertainment/wrestling thing?
I think Triple H fully acknowledges that he's the main roster audience is different from NXT. And I think so there's always going to be some level of that entertainment aspect of that sort of, you know, what Vince McMahon did, try to be all things to all people, that sort of variety show. So I don't think we'll lose completely that, but I think when it says back to wrestling, I think, you know, we saw good examples of it on Raw and SmackDown this week, that there's just going to be more wrestling, bell-to-bell time in these shows. I think that could be what it means. You know, I don't think it's going to be more belts, could be more factions. You know, we've seen one more faction at least introduced, so by definition, I guess it's more factions. Tag team wrestling, I think, Tony, that's interesting to me because that was always a staple, you know, going back to FTR and Jason Jordan and Chad Gable and some of those key tag team matches that really set the tone for a lot of those takeover shows during the Triple H era of NXT. I think that would be something, and we know Vince McMahon had this irrational distrust of tag teams and tag team wrestling, so I think that's one thing above all else that you could see the main roster adjusting accordingly to have more tag team wrestling, place a greater importance on tag teams in general.
Yeah, I will circle back to the tag teams, but to your point, I do see Triple H putting the wrestling back in WWE, you know, whereas Vince was more of a sports entertainment. Having said that, you know, they've already attached themselves to guys like Logan Paul, and I think they've also attached themselves to his brother as well. You know, one of them, I always mix the two up, even though he's on Raw every other week now. But, he already has a contract with WWE. Vince McMahon built WrestleMania off the backs of celebrity involvement, especially the first 5 years, and then he went away from it. So, considering how big the company is, I think you're not going to completely you know, go back to, you know, and the old NWAs of the mid-1980s where this is wrestling and we don't do all that stuff. I think he's going to toe the line. You're still going to see something with, like, the Paul brothers, or you may still see a spectacle-type match with, like, a Johnny Knoxville like we did at WrestleMania, which – and for someone like me, I tend to prefer an AEW-style of show. But if it's done the right way, like they did the Johnny Knoxville thing at WrestleMania, I had a blast watching that. So, and even me, for someone that like me that prefers an AEW-style presentation, there is a place for it in WWE, at least, where you can get away with the casual, you know, big-time spectacle shows with SummerSlam and WrestleMania, where you could pull off those type of things. But having said that, I think that, you know, we talked about it earlier, Greg pointed it out, the longer matches that we've seen on Raw, especially a little bit more on SmackDown, something Vince actually started to do probably 2 months removed from WrestleMania, which is probably about 4 months too late in my opinion. He already started to push the mid-card titles a little bit better. You know, he put it on the Intercontinental title on Gunther, I think has been an upgrade because it's being taken more seriously. And especially the U.S. title, how that's been treated since probably May. You know, they've treated that belt with a lot of respect. And if you're going to continue to run with one world champion, which I think we definitely talked about this back in February or March, last time I was on the show, I'm actually a proponent of the one title, one promotion. Whether that stays that way or not, we'll probably find out probably in a month if, you know, if they decide to split that up, because there's a recent report saying USA wants a world title as well. My response would be, so book the world champion on Raw also, but that's easier said than done, I guess, for them. But no, I think you're right. You know, you talk about Triple H's loves tag team wrestling, where Vince did not love tag team wrestling. I think they're going to be given more respect. I would, you know, the Usos are a great tag team. WWE, you know, they have guys that can work well in tags. It's just how they're treating them. The Viking Raiders, if booked properly, would be a good tag team. The Street Profits have been a good tag team over the last year. I mean, granted, now they're looking to break those guys up as well. But even when you go back to the women, and I talked, you know, I was going to bring this up before and I forgot to mention it. They're bringing back the women's tag team titles, and a lot of people believe that when Sasha and Naomi bolted a few months back, that was Vince McMahon's easy way of just going, forget about the women's tag titles for real now, because he'd kind of done it most of the time the titles were around anyway. So I feel like, to put a button on this, he's going to go back to a lot more of an old school style of booking, but there's still going to be those spectacle type shows where you're going to get those entertainment matches with the Paul brothers or a Johnny Knoxville, something of that sort, because those type of things do keep them in the mainstream media. And that's important to a company that's as big as WWE is at this point.
All right, DJ, back to you for your third question or comment for us tonight.
Okay, my third thing is AEW. I'm going to go off the rails here a little, so it's going to be kind of, you know, it'll be a little fun. I don't know if you guys know, AEW, they have over 20 titles, over 20. Now, it's so weird how, like, they have so many, but, like, it's just, like, I don't understand how you can have so many titles and then have a wrestling company. It's just like, it's too many titles. You don't have, and then by the pay-per-views, it's just like, what is the major thing? If you're a wrestling company, you should have, you know, this many titles, not 20, and it's so bunched up like this. I don't know if you guys really are into all these titles, or do you, like me, like, you know, you want, like, you know, there's certain, you know, the top titles, you know what I mean? Or I don't, what do you guys think? Because I don't know if you guys know about this.
Tony, it's not exactly a hot take at this point to say that AEW has too many titles, but I will say on the record, for my tastes, AEW has too many titles. There, I said it.
Mm-hmm.
Come get me on Twitter. No, you know, that's, it's true. It's true. I think they have too many. They're introducing the Trios title now as well. It's a very easy way to create storylines, where, you know, okay, what are they fighting over? Well, they're fighting over title. That's okay, that's the storyline. This guy wants to be champion, this guy's champion. Okay, easy. So it's a very easy, it's almost a cop-out way to build storylines, to have so many titles. But I think it also dilutes the value of each title every time a new title is added, not to mention the fact that we now have an interim world title because CM Punk, the champion, is still on the shelf. So, Tony, you know, even if you agree that there are too many titles, sometimes that doesn't necessarily, you don't even mind that. It doesn't hurt your enjoyment of the product. Like, I still enjoy AEW even if I think there's too many titles. So how does having so many titles affect your viewing experience of AEW?
It doesn't affect my viewing experience. And as I stated just a few minutes ago, I prefer the presentation of the AEW product, you know, over the WWE product. I mean, for me, the important titles in AEW are, of course, the world title, not the world and interim. I'm just lumping in the one for now because one's going to go away, obviously. You know, the TBS and TNT is your mid-card title, which they actually treat with more respect than WWE does their mid-card titles. The tag titles are obviously important. The one that doesn't make sense to me, but I don't mind it, is the All-Atlantic, even though the name is silly to me because it doesn't make any sense. Because what they've done with it is it seems to be like they've turned that into their international title that ironically gets defended around the world like a world title should be. But it seems to be that Pac is defending that title basically in every promotion, whether it be independent or, you know, big country or big promotions over in England. So as much as I really hated the introduction of that title, I like what they're doing with it. He's defending it in different parts of the world. So it makes it kind of interesting that, you know, you play a clip once a week and show where Pac's been this past week defending that title. Half of those others, now the other titles, we mentioned the upcoming Trios title. I'm actually excited about the Trios title, but that's also because they've been promising it for 18 months or probably 2 years now. So I'm actually excited about that one. Now the rest of them are mostly, I guess you're talking about the FTW, and all the titles they inherited from ROH.
Yeah.
If and when they could actually get Ring of Honor onto another platform, whether it's its own weekly television show or it's whether it's just a streaming show that makes sense and they can make some money off of, I feel like some of those problems go away. But for now, yeah, as much as it doesn't bother my viewing experience, it is one of those, like, God, there's so many titles, I can't even keep track of who has them. So I get where you're coming from, but it doesn't ruin the viewing experience. But I just wish that somehow Tony Khan, sooner or later, could find a home for Ring of Honor, whether it is just a very high-value streaming service or some sort of television deal, because I feel like you can get those titles off of AEW television. It would seem to maybe alleviate some of that problem and the stress of trying to say, why do we have so many titles on AEW from week to week? Because – like you said, I get the point of it, but it doesn't really hamper my viewing experience.
All right. All right, DJ, thank you for the phone call this week.
See you next week. Thanks.
All right. Take care. Sticking with AEW before we go to Reverend Keith, who is next up on hold. We had Battle of the Belts 3 on Saturday night, including Cesaro defeating Takeshita to retain the ROH title. So Takeshita is an interesting one because, you know, there's a lot of people clamoring for more of a role for him. And yet he's only here. I don't think he's here full time. And by here, I mean in the United States. So have you been okay with the use of Takeshita? I mean, he's lost a lot of key matches. Or do you think, you know, ride the wave of fan interest in him and just push him?
I think you just ride the wave because the guy, he has that natural charisma. He can work. The guy's a great worker. I mean, every match he's in is exciting. And I guess it depends on how long you could really keep him in the United States for. If you can keep him in the United States longer and longer and maybe eventually just woo him to keep, you know, enough to stay, that's fine. But it's tough. And we talked about too many titles in AEW. And like I said, it's my preferred promotion to watch. But they have so much talent. It's such a big and deep roster. You know, you're trying to build up a guy like Daniel Garcia, and I think they're doing a nice job of that recently. And you're, you know, the war, you're trying to build up Wardlow, who I still doesn't think gets enough TV time. You know, there's a couple other guys, like even Jungle Boy, who I think is phenomenal. I don't think he gets enough TV time just because this roster is so deep, and it's one of those, like, it's a good problem to have, especially when some of your top guys are injured, like, you know, AEW is dealing with right now. But to get someone like that over, and to your point, you're not even sure he's going to be here or for how long he's going to be here for, it makes it tough. But I would just ride the wave. And if he ends up sticking around, then great. You can go all in on him, no pun intended. But it's a tough situation because that roster is so deep, and there's other guys that you could be putting, you know, so much time into, I think, that are signed to full-time contracts, that it's tough. Like I said, it's a fun promotion to watch. It's probably the most fun I've had watching a promotion since WWE in the early 2000s. But, man, I wish their roster was maybe two-thirds of what it is. And because it's tough sometimes just knowing that there's so many guys that do get cycled on and off of television. But I don't envy Tony Khan's job, but I guess he's the one making the decisions and signing all the guys,
yeah,
too. So, you know, he kind of made this bed, so he has to sleep in it. But it's a tough decision, but I would just ride it out.
Well, speaking of new faces, on Rampage Friday night, we had Jon Moxley defeating Mance Warner, who discerning wrestling viewers have seen in MLW, GCW, and elsewhere. And he did get a video package, I believe, on Dynamite to kind of introduce him to the AEW fan base. But we've heard a complaint from fans who, you know, they're watching Rampage. They don't know who this guy is. Who is he? Why is he facing Jon Moxley? Why is he in such a prominent position? Why should I care? We saw that a little bit before when AEW would bring guys in, like the guys who would face Cody Rhodes. You know, Eddie Kingston was one of them once upon a time. And there were some others who were independent names who were brought in to face you know, Nick Gage was one of them who was brought in to AEW. But, you know, Cody Rhodes, when he was champion, you know, TNT champion, he brought in all these guys. You know, there were a lot of them were one-offs to face. How much of a problem is that to you that they're bringing in wrestlers like a Mance Warner? Do you think they're doing enough to introduce who these people are and why you should care about them to the audience?
I think it's more of a problem now than it was, 2 years ago? 2 years ago, you know, the roster wasn't nearly as inflated as it is now. And you can kind of do that. Plus, you were doing it as an open challenge. So it almost made more sense then, too. You know, Cody Rhodes came out every week and said, here's an open challenge. And it may be someone on the roster. It may not be. And at least then you kind of had an out where you could say, oh, hey, listen, it was an open challenge. And this guy showed up on this night and he accepted the challenge. But for now, when, like I said, you got a more than full roster, and I stated it before, and you're rotating a lot of guys on and off TV. Some guys you won't even see on TV 2 weeks in a row, and you forget what they're – you don't forget, but you got to think hard about, like, oh, what are they getting into again? One of those guys being Andrade. It's like you see him every 2 weeks, and then you remember, oh, yeah, he's in a feud with these guys or those guys, and that's kind of what his role's been over the past year since he showed up in AEW, where he's on TV for a week and then he's off for two. You know, in the early days of the company, I think it was a lot easier to explain that type of thing. And right now, I think they just need to work on what they have in house. And like I said, those type of things, unless you're trying to make a big splash with someone that you think can make an immediate difference and move the needle, I would stay away from it. But like I said, for me, it was a much easier thing to explain 2 years ago than it is right now.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go to the 410 area code. It is Reverend Keith from Baltimore, Maryland. Reverend Keith, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight.
Good evening, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call. And I do want to say I want to thank all of the people who follow me on Twitter and thank them for their support of me on these talk shows and post shows, and even when my call isn't taken, they always encourage me. So I thank you, Greg, for always being there for me, and I'm going to jump right into it. I really have an opportunity to come on in the Javier role, the cleanup role, but I'm hoping to hit a home run tonight. I enjoyed DJ from Miami. And I do want to say I kind of agree with where he was going about Triple H before I get into my 3 points, because we have to understand Triple H has always had an edge. If we go back to 1997, that meeting that they had about the Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels Survivor Series meeting that Wednesday before that November 9th pay-per-view, it was Triple H that came up with that idea that we get that belt off of Bret by any means necessary. So he was the one that came up with the idea of the Montreal Screwjob, not Vince McMahon, not Gerald Briscoe, not Pat Patterson, and certainly not Jim Ross. It was Triple H in that meeting, and that's well documented. So I know everybody sees Triple H as the godfather or the heavenly angel, and I love his direction, don't get me wrong, but I still would not put it past him to kind of give a receipt to Cody. I hope and pray not, but you never know, you know, and I think that's what that's what DJ was saying, because Triple H has always had an edge, regardless of, you know, when he was an active competitor, when he started taking over NXT, you know, he's always had an edge. So I was thinking about that when Cody first came back to the company, especially after he took the sledgehammer, you know, to the throne at that pay-per-view that time. And everyone knew that was a direct message to Triple H. So I hope and pray they can work their relationship out. But you never know, like DJ said, we'll just have to wait, you know, till January to see.
Yeah, I think that I hope that Triple H has mellowed a little more in his role as front office instead of, you know, one of the boys. You know, he was pretty obnoxious at times when he was a wrestler. And so now that he doesn't have to really push himself, now that he doesn't have to worry about how he himself comes across, I hope that edge has lessened a little bit in terms of, you know, that needing to show off, that needing to get back at people, that sort of thing. And, you know, we've seen him as an executive make a lot of, you know, reaching across the aisle. I mean, he's the guy who brought Bruno Sammartino back into the WWE fold. So he's been someone who has, and Wade Keller, don't tell him that I confused him for Vince McMahon. Wade Keller wrote after Vince was stepped down in his role and Triple H took over, that Triple H is more of a fence mender and is more of someone who, if someone crosses him or slights him, he's, you know, his personality is to just bury the hatchet. And so,
yes,
you know, that is hopefully, what, you know, words that he continues to live by.
I hope and pray. And in addition to Bruno, he also helped to orchestrate the late Ultimate Warrior's return just prior to his death. So you are right, Greg Parks. I want to touch on SmackDown. Now, I wasn't as high on the show. I didn't get a chance to see it until late Saturday because I had to work Friday night. But anyway, I wasn't as high on the show as most. I thought it was kind of boring until near like the final four segments. The women's gauntlet match was so predictable. You know, they will always have a baby, in this case Raquel Rodriguez, primarily run the gauntlet only to lose to the final entrant. It's similar to how they do with the battle royals now. They always have someone hide out, and then the commentary will make it seem like, oh, they've been eliminated or we've forgotten about them, only to return to either win it or be last disposed of. So that was kind of predictable. It was interesting how they made Liv to be the heel. And I want to say this. This is my first of the 3 points. WWE set Liv up. You know, they made her look crazy by having her look so weak in that 4.5-minute match at SummerSlam. She rarely got any offense in. Then they had her tap as the referee was counting to three. So now the fans are turning on her, and it's crazy because Ronda is a natural heel. So now you're turning on the biggest baby face of the women on the active roster right now. So, you know, it's kind of like the writing team set her up for this, you know, so she has every reason and right to be upset about the booing. And you heard they beat her out, because I know what she said in that interview with Kayla. Then secondly, they using Kayla to kind of like have the fans boo her too. If you notice, every time Kayla Braxton interviews Liv, she's rolling her eyes, she's holding the microphone way away from her face. It's almost, if I didn't know any better, I would think they set up a feud with Kayla and Liv down the road, but I know Kayla's not going to wrestle. But what are your thoughts on the way the writing team has kind of cooled off on Liv and the reason behind the booing on Friday Night SmackDown?
I tried to look at what potential reasons there were for the backlash against Liv Morgan. And, you know, I think the constant video packages showing her tapping out at the same time that she was pinning Ronda Rousey, and I get the intention from WWE's point that they're protecting Ronda Rousey, certainly a very large investment that they've made in her. But I think that also, you know, you show that over and over and over again on the video wall to the live fans, Tony, and it's natural that you're going to get you tapped out chance. Like, that's, you're almost encouraging that. So that I get more than the booing. The booing I have a harder time understanding, because it does feel more out of nowhere. They've set her up as a babyface. She's gotten good reactions from fans live on TV leading up to this SmackDown. So it was a little surprising to me. What do you think about what Reverend Keith said about the booking kind of leading in this direction versus, you know, how surprised were you that they were so vocal against Liv Morgan?
Yeah, I can't disagree with anything that was said involving the booking. They did her zero favors. She tapped out before she got the pin. The thing is with Liv, like, she has a natural likability, you know, fans want to get behind her. You know, she has this, just, like I said, it's just a natural likability. And then she starts to talk and it's almost like fans start to lose interest. And that's just like on most of her promos. It's just, I feel like they want to like her, but they don't really have an interest in what she has to say. The thing that I thought was interesting is if you watched real closely at the end of that match, Liv was at ringside, clutching the title with a smile on her face. It looked like the cat that ate the canary. So I don't know if they're, to Keith's point, Reverend Keith's point, if they are leaning towards a bit of a heel turn, because, you know, a babyface champion shouldn't be happy that she snuck away with a title. And then she lied. Even in the promo, she said, oh, I tapped out after the pin. You know you didn't, and the video evidence shows that. What type of babyface is lying blatantly to the fans? So, I mean, I think it's something to look out for, but like I said, I don't know. I feel like maybe this is going to be one of those weird storylines that Vince McMahon had a direction for, and now we're switching midstream, and this is one of the first ones we're going to see that Triple H has to navigate himself around. Maybe he has a different idea for this than what Vince did, and it may not make sense as we, you know, see it develop, but maybe once we get past this weird sticking point in the middle, it'll make sense. But for now, I'm a kind of at a wait and see, but for me, my antenna is up that she's turning heel.
It did seem, you know, she did make that comment during the promo, and I felt like that was more of a reaction almost to the fans, because I think she had to think on her feet there a little bit to sort of address the reaction that she was getting. And so, you know, that may have been just a mistake on her part, a misspeaking, trying to sort of right the ship a little bit to the reaction she was getting. So I wonder if that played a part in it too. Reverend Keith, back to you for your second question or comment for us.
Yes, I like where you're going, Tony, because I could definitely see them steering towards a heel run for her. And then if that is the case, then you would wonder who would be the one to challenge her. Maybe it would be Raquel, but we'll stay tuned to this. Now, I have some thoughts on the main event title seen and what developed at the conclusion of Friday Night SmackDown. Because, again, the biggest talking point of the weekend is not Battle of the Belts, but it's the return of Karrion Kross and Scarlett Bordeaux. And I'm happy to see them return. And I'm glad that he has hair now, which I've been following him anyway on the Independence ever since he was released. But to make a long story short, I have some thoughts. My thought is this. They place him in the title picture to protect Roman. Now, it's interesting that, okay, he makes an immediate impact by attacking the number one contender prior to his huge opportunity in his home country. Now, this can go multiple ways. We all know USA wants a heavyweight champion on its program. Roman is basically, if he's not on SmackDown, he's vacationing somewhere. So maybe they want to send Roman on a vacation along with the wise man. So what they could do to protect Roman, you could insert Karrion Kross in this title match at Clash at the Castle, September the 3rd, have Kross get pinned by Drew, and then you're protecting Roman. And then you could always have the infamous Paul Heyman swerve after the match and say, oh, it was just for one of the two titles. Okay, there was a clause in the contract. So then Drew takes the title to Raw. Roman remains on SmackDown. So then that way USA gets their champion. Roman is protected. Roman remains on SmackDown as one of the two champions. I think this is how this whole scenario is going to play out. What are your thoughts?
There are a lot of ways to skin a cat, so to speak, and that's one of them. I think, you know, I've brought up the other idea that I had here on Wrestling Night in America where theory cashes in. Roman is protected because he's just fought a grueling match. Maybe it's a Clash of the Castle. He's retained his title, and Theory cashes in and wins. And the clause in the contract inside the Money in the Bank briefcase says that he's only challenging for one title, just as any Money in the Bank contract previously was for, just one title, obviously. So that would be a way to get one of the titles off of Roman Reigns. I mean, Tony, how seriously do you think WWE and Triple H are taking this idea that, boy, and it's a point I've made here a lot, that Raw just felt a little empty without having that world title on the show. It's the direction felt a little lacking without that top title. So I'd be all for getting a top title back to Raw and sort of, you know, the direction being a little clearer for the top of the card. But you know, what's your favored way, I guess, of getting there, and how seriously do you think WWE is considering doing that?
You know what? Here's the funny thing is, like I said, going back to before WrestleMania, I was very much pro one world title, and I still am, and that was before, as Reverend King so succinctly and nicely put it, decided he was going to go to a part-time schedule and go on vacation, because what we have now is basically Roman playing the part of Brock Lesnar from, what, 3-4 years ago. So
yes,
I'm still good with one world champion. I don't know if it's going to be Drew. You feel like the right thing to do is, in Drew's home country, have him win that title, because I feel like Drew is actually going to show up on both shows. I still am very much for one world title. I think that WWE's done a great job elevating the U.S. title the last couple months. I think they've done a better than decent job with the Intercontinental title the last few months, and I think it's a work in progress, but steps have been made. I still want to keep it as one world champion. I would prefer to see Drew McIntyre finally get that chance to do it with crowds. The poor guy, you know, he was basically the early pandemic champion, and he didn't get to really get that real chance to carry the company like I really think he could have. He was kind of handed a raw deal. I mean, it's, you know, it's, I hate to say that because, you know, the country was going through something at that time where it just was what it was, and it was just a bad timing for Drew McIntyre. So if it's me, I'm getting the title off of Roman. I'm putting it on McIntyre, both titles, I should say, if I want to be clear. And if Roman is big enough star at this point. He doesn't need to be the world champion. He's also part-time. And if, you know, if they really are going to do this thing with Roman and The Rock at WrestleMania, it doesn't have to be for the world title either. So for me, I'm saying keep it as one champion. My choice is Drew McIntyre, and for me, Drew McIntyre is a workhorse, and he shows up on both shows.
I do agree with Reverend Keith, though, about his idea that, you know, somebody wins it at Clash of the Castle, and then Paul Heyman pulls some strings and says that it was only for one of the titles. I don't think you can go in if you want to separate the titles, and that's why my idea was theory cashing in. If you want to separate the titles, I don't think you can go into a match and announce beforehand that it's only for one of the titles, because I think that telegraphs the result. I think that too much tells you that Roman's going to lose one of the titles. So I do think you have to do it somewhat nefariously, somewhat of a dusty finish to get there. So that part I do agree with. Reverend Keith, back to you for your final point for us tonight.
My final point is, in addition to Karrion Kross and Scarlett and the other returns that we've seen thus far with Bailey, Sky, and Kai, I am almost certain that we will probably soon see the return of Bray Wyatt, Johnny Gargano, Candice LeRae, among others. And it would be good to see some of the names and faces that were released as well as de-pushed or slid down the card mysteriously, either on the main roster or NXT, getting an opportunity to shine now that we have a new direction. You know, I like the direction in which we're going thus far, especially on Raw 2 weeks, and especially this Monday night in particular, was fun to watch. It, you know, less commercial breaks, and even when they had the commercial breaks, as I had mentioned on Twitter that night, they were well-timed. You know, you had matches with splits of 11 and a half minutes, 10 and a half minutes, 9 minutes, and you may have had like two of those three matches go nonstop, you know, whereas the other one might have been split screen. So that's something that they need to work more on, and it was a pet peeve of mine during the Vince McMahon era, especially with the women. He would always start a woman's match, and a minute and a half into the women's match, cut to a 3-minute, 40-second commercial. You come back, you've missed almost 4.5 minutes of the match. So it's crazy. But thanks be to God that Triple H now has a new direction, and he's more along the Tony Khan lines of letting us see the match. We get to see the promos, so why not let us see the matches? So that's what Triple H is doing. So that's a shining light right there. So I'm happy for the new direction. What are your thoughts on the new direction? Tony, it's a joy talking to you. Greg, thanks for taking my call. We'll speak again soon. God bless you.
Thank you, Reverend Keith. Always good to hear from you here on Sunday nights on Wrestling Night in America. Yeah, I mean, we kind of touched on a lot of this, our thoughts on the new direction at the beginning of the show, Tony, but certainly one of the things we didn't talk about was the readjusting of commercial breaks, the no commercials first hour of Raw, which is not going to be the norm going forward, but it was nice. But I think, yeah, the commercial breaks during the match has always kind of annoyed me. And I think Reverend Keith is right that it was a little more palatable if you're someone who actually enjoys watching matches. It was a little more palatable this week on Raw and SmackDown the way they did things.
Yeah, definitely. And Reverend Keith, thanks for the kind words. I appreciate that. Yeah, I think some of those changes also are going to be – they're going to take more time to develop than others. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know – WWE, being as big a company as it is, you can't make swift changes like you'd like to. I guess what I'm getting at with that is I could see 3 to 6 months' time, someone like a Kevin Dunn being out as well. That's not something we've talked about yet today. We're still getting 100 camera cuts. But, no, the stuff with the commercials, you know, I felt even the last few weeks – even before, I want to say it was even the week leading up to SummerSlam, some of the stuff with the commercial breaks, it was more well-timed. It was a little bit less predictable than in the past where as soon as the action spills out of the ring, you know, you go to break, and the announcers with the cliched corny line, it would always be something along the lines of, oh, to the outside they go. Can so-and-so get back into it? And then they go to commercial. They've kind of gone away from that to make it so corny and cliched. You know, little things I've noticed, the announcers are not, you could tell they feel, you got to just pay attention to it. And I know it's tough sometimes when you're trying to watch it as like a reporter rather than a fan, but they sound looser. They sound more relaxed. They feel like, it's almost like they're not being coached as much on what to say. There are also certain little spots where before the WWE announcers are almost taught to dumb it down or be, they almost were coached to be foolish. Now they're kind of calling out some of the stuff that normally, you know, that as a fan, you want to point out at home, like, yeah, this is the direction this person doesn't seem right. Like I said, it's, maybe I'm not conveying that the way I want to, but just pay attention to little things like that. And it has been a noticeable difference over the last week and a half, 2 weeks with some of the stuff that, with the production and the announcers and things of that sort, those things are slowly changing. And I think it, in the long run, it's going to be for the better. I mean, even Michael Cole was calling moves over the last 2 weeks, and he was never allowed to do that. And that's one of those things that if you actually watched when they did the tournament over in the UK and they let Michael Cole call that, Michael Cole is drastically underrated as a pro wrestling announcer, but he had to do what he was told to do by Vince McMahon to fit this vision of what WWE was. And if they just let off some of the reins and let these guys be themselves, you're going to notice even from the backstage and interviewers and the announcers at ringside, I think the product's going to be so much more palatable going forward. And it's going to take some time for people, I think, to realize the changes. And then if you look at a Raw maybe 3 months from now and go back to a Raw from June and listen to it, you're going to go, man, I think the changes are just going to be tremendous. I'm really bullish on where I think this is going to go. I just hope I'm not being overly optimistic.
Even at SummerSlam, you heard the announcers a little looser, mm-hmm. I think, and they'd even made reference to it a couple times. So, yeah, that's something to look forward to because the announcing could be quite grating as someone who has listened to Vince McMahon produce announcers for years. And, you know, you can kind of spot the little tendencies that Vince had drilled into the heads of his announcers, and it was groan-inducing. I even heard, I think it was Pat McAfee, say that someone had a championship match coming up instead of a championship opportunity. So, like it was like the heavens opened at that moment. it was amazing.
And even for you, Greg, especially all those years you covered SmackDown, and those were always those taped shows. So you know I think it was Cole and Taz during that long run where you probably got to hear those same tendencies over and over every week because when they did those taped shows, I think there were stories that Cole and Taz would have to do hours upon hours of, like, redubbing their commentary the way Vince wanted. So I don't envy you because all those years that you put into covering SmackDown, you probably got to hear all of them.
Yeah, there was a lot of combinations during the time that I did SmackDown from, I think it was 07 to 17. Those were the years that I covered SmackDown in real time for PWTorch.com. And there were quite a few incarnations of announcers. I think that was also during the McFoley color commentary era on SmackDown.
Yeah.
So, it was, and everybody sounded the same. And I think that's what Vince McMahon wanted, unfortunately. Moving on to our last topic of discussion here before we go tonight, it is the G1. We are winding down here. We've had some big upsets lately. Just yesterday, Chase Owens defeated Tomohiro Ishii, and Jonah defeated Kazuchika Okada. And also a big run for David Finlay. We'll talk about that when we go over the standings here. But he's leading Block D, actually, at this point with, I think there's one or two more shows to go before we get into the playoffs. Coming up, I'm sorry, there's one more week until the playoffs. We got the next show on August 9th is the main evented by Naito versus Kenta. Then the next night, August 10th, Tanahashi versus Goto. Then we take a little bit of a break, come back on August 13th with Taichi versus Jay White in the main event of that show. August 14th, Tanahashi versus Kenta is the main event. And there's going to be one show after that, I believe, and then we get into the semifinal. So I believe five more regular shows to go. Right now, Block A, there's a two-way tie between Jonah and Okada with 6 points each, so that could explain why Jonah went over Okada last night. The B block, Jay White has a pretty solid lead with 8 points there. He also has the most points of anyone in the G1 right now. Block C is another two-way tie. Tanahashi and Zack Sabre Jr. both have 6. And the D block is perhaps the most interesting. Dave Finley does lead that one with 6, but there is a five-way tie for second with 4 points each. So that's a block to keep an eye on over the next week or so. Tony, don't know how much you're into New Japan or the G1. Any thoughts on any of these?
I try to keep up with New Japan as much as I can. It's one of those promotions that there's just so much wrestling on, even in the United States. I mean, I have been ripping off of Sean Radican's New Japan World for probably almost 2 years now, and I watch it when I can. Thank you, Sean, again. but it's like one of those things, like, there's so much wrestling that I don't get to watch that it is easily at my fingertips sometimes that I don't get to watch. So I'm hoping, like, my goal is this year, once they get to the semifinals, to watch some of that on New Japan World, because the big names like the Jay Whites and the Okadas and, you know, and even, you know, like you said, Jonah is getting a push, which it's funny you bring up Jonah. I wouldn't be surprised if Triple H makes that call in the next 3 to 6 months. You know, I'm thinking once it gets to the semifinals, I really want to try to make the plunge this time to try to keep better track. It's one of those things where between the Torch and then also with the Observer, I try to keep track of what's going on in Japan. I just don't get to watch a ton of it because, like I said, there's just only so much time in a day. But my goal is this year, once it does get towards the end of the tournament, to buckle down and watch some of those matches because – you know, from everything I've seen of New Japan that has come through AEW, you know, I got to watch the Forbidden Door pay-per-view and some of the, you know, I've become a real big, if I'm putting on my fan hat, I've become a real big fan of Jay White. So this is something that once we get towards the end of this tournament, I do want to buckle down and get into more. But like I said, from what I understand, it's been a pretty good G1 so far. Yeah, like I said, that's probably the most I could speak on it. I don't want to, you know, lead people astray and think that I've been able to watch a lot of these matches or anything like that either.
Well, no, and that's something that I've struggled with too. I'm caught up through 13 shows. I'm somehow still caught up. I don't know if that's going to be the case when school starts with the kids on Wednesday. It's been easier going back to the summer schedule this year to keep up with it, and I've even caught a couple shows live, which I live tweeted at Greg M. Parks. New Japan is just one of those things. Like, I have my New Japan World subscription just every month, and the G1 is one of those times where I try to watch as much as I can, and I've even watched all the tag matches too, so I haven't been skimping. Wrestle Kingdom is another time, you know. There's maybe one or two other big shows that I try to watch. I've caught a couple of their shows that they've done in the United States this spring. So I feel like I'm more caught up on New Japan than I have been in a while, but it is a struggle, you know, when you're balancing work and life and home and WWE and AEW and Impact, and now you've got New Japan, you know, running more shows and things like that. And it does become very difficult. But it has been a good G1. It's been interesting with the 4 blocks rather than the 2. I do think I like it, even though, you know, it's not a perfect system by any stretch, but I think it helps save on a lot of wear and tear. Wrestlers are wrestling fewer matches, so that's a plus. And it does make things sort of interesting because instead of just 2 guys coming out, you have 4 guys and you have a semifinal. So that adds a little more intrigue to things. I'm sure it makes it harder for Gato to book as intricately as he always does the G1s. But yeah, it's been good. I've enjoyed myself. I've enjoyed watching the show. So, Tony, maybe we'll have you on to talk some G1 at the end of the tournament, and you know the fallout from that. But thank you for joining me here tonight. Before we let you go, as usual, go ahead and let people know where they can find your work for the Torch and your social media.
Okay. Yeah, I've been a little bit absent. I was really strong with doing some SmackDown hits and misses for much of the spring, and then life got in the way, and then I was ready to reintroduce Falls Count Anywhere back to the Pro Wrestling Torch, went on vacation at Disney, came back with COVID. That was fun for a few weeks. and then I got back in touch with Zach Hadorn, and Falls Count Anywhere will be re-debuting with the Torch in the coming days or possibly week. My idea is to, or my hope is to have something out this week, so it will be on the website. You can follow me on Twitter at Tony D'Onofrio or at Tony D'Onofrio, because as we discussed last time, both are correct. And I'm not my parents, and I'm not my uncle, which, you know, my dad and my uncle, who are brothers, both say the last name differently, and both are correct, and both get upset if you say it the wrong way. But luckily for you, I don't care which way it is. So it's on Twitter at Tony D'Onofrio, TonyDonofrio. I will definitely talk wrestling with you on there, and if I'm watching a show live, chances are I'll be live tweeting during it as well. So, Greg, as always, I love coming on here. It's always fun, and you know, as long as life and work does not get in the way, you know, anytime you want to have me, I will be there as long as I can make it.
Excellent. And maybe I'll alternate. Every other time I'll call you a different, you know, pronounce your last name differently, just to keep it even, So maybe I'll try to do that.
Keep
Tony,
on
great,
your toes.
Great. Yeah, absolutely. Keep me on my toes. Great talking to you as always, Tony.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And thank you for joining us with your emails, with your phone calls. You can email us anytime, wnialivecast@gmail.com. We talk about the big shows in pro wrestling, so if you ever have any thoughts or comments on, you know, even during the week, watching Raw, NXT, SmackDown, AEW, Impact, New Japan, whatever, shoot us an email. We'd love to read your email and gush it on the air. So, again, you can find me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks, and we'll talk to you again right here next Sunday, because if it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America.